Welcome to Project Chatter, the podcast where PPM experts from various sectors talk about the latest trends. Listen to Val and Dale as they talk about tried and tested best practices and share their unfiltered thoughts about the industry. Whether you're here to learn how to progress your career, improve your project control skills, or just want to hear an Aussie and South African rant about projects, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Project Chatter podcast with your hosts, Dale Fung and Val Matthews.
In today's economic climate, construction cost and schedule overruns can be disastrous.
Innate construction software helps you spot risks before they happen.
Their cloud-based solutions give you the real-time insights you need to minimize risk and improve operational efficiency.
With Innate, you keep projects on schedule and under budget. Get started today at innate.com. That's INEIGHT.com.
In this week's pod, we were joined by Richard Medcalf to discuss making time for strategy. Richard describes himself as a what you get if you put a McKinsey consultant, a slightly unorthodox pastor, and an entrepreneur into a blender. He is the founder of X Quadrant and a trusted advisor to exceptional CEOs and entrepreneurs and their leadership teams. Listen, Martin, we didn't have Dale this time, but I think we run the show pretty well. What were your key takeaways from our session with Richard?
Yeah, obviously it's a fascinating subject, personal development. He has a lot of experience with CEOs and people at all levels of the organization. He had some really good, interesting tidbits around finding your rocket fuel, your sense of purpose, and some kind of strategies to doing that. He talked about his book, Time. We won't spoil what the acronym is. We discussed some things around the world of infinity. And again, listen to find out what that means. How about you, Val? What were your main takeaways?
Yeah, I think having some tactical methodologies to approach how you avoid distractions and maybe some of the ways you can, I guess, build atomic habits, small things, or maybe start small, think big is an old adage of mine. And I think with Richard's view of how exactly he approaches the C-suite is pretty interesting too. So there's a lot in this. Obviously, we ran out of time to finish the acronyms with any detail, but obviously Rich has got a lot of experience working with the C-suite, which is an interesting point of view. So sit back, guys, relax, and enjoy the pod. Hello, project people. Welcome back to a brand new episode of the Project Chatter podcast. It's always good to have you with us. And we're missing Dale, unfortunately. He's decided to have a bender in Birmingham, but we do have his best colleague here, Mr. Martin Kirsten. How are you, Martin?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Yeah, shame Dale. He keeps saying he's under the weather, but we all know the story.
We do know the story. I'm great, mate. There's no under the weather here because we have beers in the evening and it's 6 o'clock in the morning, so I'm okay for a good couple of hours. But let's introduce our guest today. A really interesting topic as well. We were just talking about it offline. Richard Medcalf, how are you, mate?
Hi, yeah, I'm good, thank you. In fact, talking about beers, yeah, you're keeping me from my beers, right? It's 10 p.m. here where I'm recording, so this is a dry night. Terrible.
No, it's you're fine. Welcome to do. Richard, a drink and show. We don't mind that. Actually, I think Martin's got a beer in his hand right now, so it just helps with the flow of the questions. Absolutely no issue there, as long as you're over 18.
Well, despite my accent, right, I do live in Paris, so it's actually wine, right? These days, it's
perfect.
I've migrated.
Perfect. Well, Richard, you've got a pretty interesting story, and I want to get started there because I think, you're kind of like an advisor to the stars, but within our industry, you know what I mean, the C-suite, and you do a lot of work at that level. And sometimes I think for us, the ivory tower is a bit confusing because we don't understand how what they do translates to what we do, that being those that are on projects. How did you get into that role, and what does your role really entail, mate? I'd love to know your origin story.
Yeah, well, as I like to say, whenever anyone asks me my story, interrupt me when it gets boring because it's my favorite topic, right? Talking about myself. So strap in if you've got a spare 5 hours and, here we go. No, seriously. So I guess on the outside, what you can like, what my CV would look like, right? That's one story. Then there's the inner messier story, right? So on the outside, so I grew up in the UK. I studied at Oxford. I went into strategy consulting in the tech, media, telecoms kind of space, was the youngest ever partner there, then got headhunted by Cisco Systems, so went into big corporate, worked Yeah, a lot with them. I had American bosses, and I was like, I think I got to platinum, you know, air miles status in about 4 months. Traveling economy, which is really, you know, you can imagine how bad that was. So, worked for about 10 years at Cisco, and then really thought, like, well, what's this legacy I want to talk about with my kids? My, in fact, not even my kids, my grandchildren, my great grandchildren. What am I going to tell them at the end of my life if they ask me, what did you do? And I realized I didn't want to just say something like, you know, I'd helped AT&T increase their EBITDA margin by 0.1% or something, right? So some kind of financial metric. It's okay. I love working with clients and getting results, but that just didn't sound like a complete story to me. So that's kind of where I decided to leave the corporate world. And it was, you know, I had a really great job. I mean, I was in a team that reported to the CEO, set up by the CEO of Cisco to go and work on these kind of business innovations and strategic partnerships and things. So it was a fun job, but I realized there needed to be a different mission in my life. So I set up my business, X Quadrant, really to work with really senior, high accomplished leaders to help them, what I call, multiply their impact, which is really to reinvent their own success formula. Okay. In other words, we get to a certain level and yet that becomes our comfort zone. And it's pretty impressive for most people, no matter where we were, you know, like people are like, well, this is great. But inside, we know, yeah, but I'm just working hard, but I'm maxed out at this point. I'm in my comfort zone. I'm doing lots of things fast, but I'm in my comfort zone. And isn't there another level I could get to that would be even more impressive or really more interesting? But for me, my secret mission is I want them to change the world, because if impressive business leaders can't change the world, then who can, right? So that's kind of, if you like, the surface story. We can kind of get into the business is executive coaching and consulting with these kind of leaders. I run a few programs for mid-level managers, these kind of things. But if we go back to what drives me, you might see it on my picture here. This is a picture here behind me. This is my sister, Georgina. Now, she actually passed away last year, but she was very severely mentally disabled. And so I had this kind of high-flying career. And she, you know, she needed 24-hour care. She had a whole team of carers. She never, she couldn't speak. She had epilepsy. She had autism. She had issues with her lungs, her kidneys. I mean, she had a lot of issues. And my father always used to say, I can't really imagine having two kids that were further apart on their trajectories in life, really. And yet she was very inspirational to me. And one of the things that stuck with me was, you know, if you have the opportunities to make a difference, if you have the talents, the resources, like, why the hell not go make a difference? Because other people can't make that difference, right? They can't do it. Or alternatively, they can't do it because like my sister, they literally physically couldn't, or because like my parents, they were spending most of their time caring, right? And so if you actually have the opportunity to come have fun in the world and make an impact, let's do that. So that's kind of, I guess, where I come from in all of this. And in my own business, I started off, you know, I was working with people, coaching them on this and that. And I realized, you know, I can help people get a promotion. And I do that in some of my more mid-level programs. I do help people who are into a role, who want to get to their next level. And I love doing that work. But I realized the end game I have for really everybody is, in what way can you change the world? And in what way can you make an order of magnitude, you know, 10x impact over and above what you're currently imagining? That's what excites me. I guess it's a strategist in me, right, from my consulting days. I'm always thinking about how do we strategize to get out of this incremental path that it's so easy to fall onto.
That's an incredible story. And, obviously a massive driver for motivation. And it almost puts you in a place of gratitude too. You know, you appreciate things more. But, you know, how did you know this was it? Like, this was the thing out of all the things you could have done, Richard, because obviously you're quite intelligent. You could have stayed in management consulting, made a fortune. You would have made an impact in either sport, to be fair. You found something really kind of niche specifically for you. How did you get there? Because a lot of the time our listeners are listening, you know, they're looking for that thing that gets them out of bed, the passionate thing, the thing that motivates and excites them. Because motivation is temporary, but there's something else that drives us out of bed. What was it for you? When was that moment for you?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you're completely right. I mean, one of the things I often work on is that rocket fuel. You know, you have to find a sense of purpose and motivation that's big enough to get you over out of your own way, actually, to make a difference. So where did it come from? Well, I mean, I think the first thing to say is all the what I just told you about my sister and things, I didn't realize for many years, right? Because for me, it was normal growing up with a mentally handicapped sister. You know, it was just what it was. So some of these things you really see in retrospect, right? And it's a bit of a path. So there was a time when I started to go, you know what? As I said, I don't want to spend my whole life in this big corporate machine selling, you know, internet networking equipment. You know, it was fun. But I realized that wasn't going to be where I wanted to double down really in my whole life. And so I was starting to think about, well, what's important to me? It's interesting, right? So one thing I did is I started the blog. I think and it's interesting to look at what do you do, which no one's paying you for. What do you want to do anyway? And I created the blog, and the blog was called, it's not online anymore, but it was called Purposeful People. Because I was like, I want to help like people who want to make a difference, basically, right? That was in the title, right?
Awesome.
And I wrote a bit of that, and it wasn't very consistent, but it was there. I definitely did it, and I ran a little online program. And that was before I even left Cisco. And then I think I spoke to some friends, and I was like, well, you know, I want to do something different. I'm hesitating, do I go back into another corporate job or, perhaps do something with myself? And I asked people, like, what do I do really well? What do I do really well? What would you come to me for? And what are the words you'd use to describe me? You know, if I was a TV channel and all the shows were similar format, what would be the ambiance of those shows? That's one way of putting it, right? Or what are the kind of key words? So people would say things like, you know, deep thinking plus drive to completion. Or they'd say things like, yeah, you always like expand my sense of possibility. And then you make it really practical so I can go and do something. Or, you know, I just like leave, you know, with like new ways forward whenever I talk to you or whatever it is. And so I started to think, yeah, there's something here that I love doing and I just do it naturally. And I'm always finding ways to do it. And I'm fascinated by that stuff, right? The books I'm reading, it wasn't books on internet networking. It was books on personal transformation, right? So I was just looking, you know, normally the evidence is right under your nose, right? It's the things that you've always loved doing. It's the books you like reading, the things you like writing about, right? It's going to be found in that. It might not be the exact subject, but there's something in that. You know, what is it? You're pursuing creativity, you're pursuing learning, you're pursuing, you know, understanding what's new, people, whatever it is. So I think that's where it started to come. And so for me, it was not a complete instant process, right? So I think I realized, it was there clearly that I wanted to help people have an impact, purposeful people, the blog, it was clear. When I started my business, it was like, well, how am I going to make some money? What's that going to look like? I knew I wanted to do this thing around having people think differently. So I kind of work with teams and organizations. I still do that work, but it was almost more on the training side, which wasn't really my thing. I don't really like doing the same thing more than once, right? So doing training was not quite my thing. I did a bit of what I used to do in terms of building economic financial models for people and that kind of thing. But yeah, that was too much in my old world. It wasn't in that deep transformation that I wanted to do. And then I started to work with clients one-to-one, and I really enjoyed that. But I realized which of the clients that energized me, right, that really excited me, they're actually ones who had some corporate span of control, right, the ones who actually had the levers available so that my strategic brain could help them not only work on themselves and work on the business, right? Mm-hmm. I can help people just work on themselves. I can help people just work on the business. But what I love doing is working at both levels, right? So that they change how they're leading, and then they change what they're actually doing as well.
Yeah, brilliant.
So I suppose what I'm saying is it's a bit of a windy path, right? So I think, but it is a question of you've got to take some action and do something, right? You can't do it purely by filling in a questionnaire. Although I did a few of those as well.
No, it sounds like you've definitely done some trialing and erroring. And I think with this particular type of work, I mean, the title of this particular show is great, Making Time for Strategy. And obviously you have a book we can talk about later, but you know, a lot of the, I guess we kind of service, if we talk about the demographic of the podcast and the type of people that Martin and I work with on a day-to-day, we're talking about project staff at all levels. You know, we talk with executives, we talk with planners, practitioners, all sorts. And a lot of the time, I guess the translation, and this may be where you can help us, Richard, is lost between strategy and the actual organization or strategy and the project. Let's get some baselines and definitions sorted. So for the uninitiated, you know, how do you describe strategy straight off the bat to someone who maybe hasn't had a lot of experience or maybe has, and how do you get them to kind of get involved if it's, because it's an above and a beyond kind of energy, isn't it? It's not the same thinking that you would use to kind of service your car or take your kids to school. It's a completely different mindset in terms of how you're considering what's in front of you. Is that right?
Yeah. So I suppose when I talk about strategy, in a way, I mean, people think about business strategy, corporate strategy, and that can be it, right? But actually, strategy applies to us all, whatever level. So for me, it's more, if you like, the strategic. Okay, strategy is the strategic, like what's important, in a way. The way I like to picture it is like a lens. Right, a lens focuses in, right? It focuses light into a laser, into a point. And that has power, right, when you focus in. And so I'd like to say many organizations or many people, they don't have a strategy, they have a smattergy. You know, it's just they just throw it all against the wall, right? It's just lots of stuff. And so for me, strategy is just about bringing in focus. So my strategy is simply like, what's the way that I'm going to achieve my objectives, right? I mean, that's the basic thing, right? Well, what's the way we're going to get generally some kind of shift in where we are, right? So operations, if you like, is often playing not to lose. Just don't screw up, right? Just like make sure you hit this week's target, right? Strategy tends to be, there's a certain shift that I want to make, and there's probably a certain investment that I need to make, investment of time, or of money, or of energy, whatever, right? In making some shifts, right? Building some new capabilities, and they're going to get me from A to B. So when I'm talking about making time for strategy, what I'm really thinking about is, how do we make those investments so that we create a better future?
Yeah, fantastic. And I think with at least that, Richard, we talked about time as well and personal time and personal strategy. And I think strategy is that long time piece as well. It's not necessarily the short and the tactical. Sometimes it involves some abstract thinking. How do you get someone in the mood to talk about strategy, or at least, you know, from their perspective to be strategic? Is there, a special seance? Do you do a dance? Like, how do you get this mindset ready?
Yeah, actually, there's a quite good dance. I'm going to get you to do it right now, actually. So first of all, just to stand up. No, seriously. We'll do that later on after a couple more drinks. I can see Martin's downing them quite a few now, so we'll be there soon. So I suppose, how do I get people thinking about strategy? Well, it's a great exercise. So two, right? The first one is... Well, especially what I call the holy shit exercise, right? Which is basically, imagine that we meet in 3 years. Okay, so let's say 3 years, and we'll get on another podcast conversation, and I say, hey, you know, how's it going? And you say, amazing. Holy shit, it's amazing. Like, you would not believe what's happened since we last spoke. You know, you remember back then I was doing the podcast and this was going on in my life. And now, boom, this is amazing. Couldn't be happier at my progress. And you start to tell me all the things that would make your life amazing or your work amazing. And why you'd be so excited. I like to actually get my clients to do that exercise in the present tense. So we're actually going into the time machine 3 years into the future. Tell me about the last 3 years. What's changed for you? And why is that amazing? What we're doing there is we're trying to tap into people's emotions. Right? And get them not to just get in their head, like, oh yeah, I think it'd be good to get a promotion. Perhaps that's not what they need.
What are some of the responses to that? Is it generally status-based, money status, or do you find it's maybe with the senior leaders, is it something else?
Well, you start off, I'm only pausing because I'm thinking perhaps I should just ask you and do it with you now, right? So that depends how spicy you want to play.
I'm ready. Come on.
Yeah. Okay. So, and the answer is, it depends, right? It depends how well people light up, because they might give you like what they think is a sensible answer, right? Or they might actually, you know, and so sometimes I listen, I'm going, you know, I'm not really feeling it, right? So they might say, yeah, I think I'd like to have a team of, you know, bigger and perhaps have a bit more, you know, perhaps have another $1 billion of, or, you know, $1 million of responsibility or $1 billion or whatever it is, you know, and, you know, it'd be good perhaps to, you know, whatever, like, you know, sign up 10 more customers. Yeah, it's not only that exciting, right? It's like, it's okay, but if they go, oh, you know, it'd be amazing if I was like, I don't know, if I was, if I'd set up my own business, or if, you know, if I'd like become CEO and I'm able to like, or you know, I'm like, if they are, you know, they might be the CEOs, it might, you know, I'm speaking to the United Nations and we're changing policy and, you know, whatever comes out, right? So for me, what's important is actually, and we can change the time scale, it's not always 3 years, but what I'm trying to get is something which feels a little bit edgy, right? I don't even feel I can do this right now, but it would be amazing if I could. Right, that's the kind of energy. So often people might give me like that kind of slightly safe answer. And I'm like, is that what would be amazing, or is that just what would be not bad?
Yeah, that seems to work. I mean, maybe something like verbalization of the first things that they come out of their brain is really just articulating what's in their brain. And then I tend to find when people talk about kind of what they want to do in the 3 years, you know, you do this in career development, Richard, and people tend to talk about what they can't achieve in a short term, but underestimate what they can achieve in a long term. And so they do talk about materialistic things or tactical things that are kind of within the swim lane. You know, you talked about the comfort zone. And I think a lot of people, you probably get this with this, people looking for promotions, and they're looking like, how do I get that? How do I move to the next step? And it's like, you really got to punch above your weight. You know, you got to step out and look different and do something of value. And make sure everybody notices that you're doing that. And I think that's one of the challenges with execs. It's almost the other way around. We don't see sometimes the effort and the application of what they're doing and the impact it has on the organization. So it's like with these two streams of work. One of the things you also mentioned was, were you going to say something? Sorry, Richard, you're going to jump in there.
No. What I was going to say is, we were just talking about, you're talking about strategy. So what we're talking there is more about vision, right? Which for me is the first part, right? So vision is like, you need to know what it is you'd love to create. And actually one of my programs is called Impact Accelerator. And what I do in that is, the first part is really about getting people really, really connected to a vision for their own future, right? And then the second part is getting them connected to reality, right? So we do like a 360 with people, so that they actually, so in the organization, their context, they also understand like, what are people expecting and needing from them to have more impact, right? So it's this mix. So what you're trying to find is this sweet spot between what's my vision that I want to achieve and what does the organization require of me, right? How does the organization define success, right? Because and when you find that sweet spot, then you find something that, you know, you want to work on, because it moves you towards your vision and it makes you successful in the organization at the same time, right? So that's kind of the first part. And really, strategy is then like, well, how do you actually, you know, it's like identifying what is that thing and how do you make that a reality? So for people who don't know how to come up with strategy, I tend to say, well, once you've got your vision, the question is then, well, what, again, put a timer on your phone and just ask yourself, like, just write down questions that come to mind about that vision. Like, how would I do that? Like, who would I need to speak to? I mean, you just write down like the answers, just the questions, right? Like, what skills might I need? You know, who would help me? Who could help me on this journey? I'm making it up, right? But you just start to, if you just brainstorm for 3 minutes, you don't have the answers, but you'll have this sense of confidence. Oh, yeah, these are questions that I could address these questions. So I could start to move forward. Often what holds us back is this kind of ambiguity, right? I like to say the most important project is the one that no one else is asking for. So when people are really good operationally, as I'm sure most of your listeners are, they're really good at operations. They know how to drive things forward, make things happen, right? But people are asking them for that, like deliver the project or whatever. But strategy is about use, is often about, you know, the strategic, the thing that's really going to move the needle for you. It's you have to come up with that, right? It's going to, like, I'll give you an example. When I was in consulting, I noticed that, you know, to be successful in strategy consulting, you basically, when you come in as a junior, you know, you're building lots of, well, I was building lots of Excel financial models for people, right, for customers, and getting and billing that. And that was how you're successful. But I realized after a while, you know, everyone's building, all my fellow graduates were, you know, were building the models from scratch each time, custom models, very complex. I said, yeah, but there's always some similar elements. And the quality of these models varies a lot. They don't always look great. They're not always brilliant to present to customers. They're not always very flexible because to build in, you know, scenarios and things into an Excel model is a bit of a pain. So I invested time. Back to investment, right? I mentioned investment. I invested time. I spent evenings, you know, building out a template and a little macro toolbar, and I had to geek out and learn how to do that. My colleagues were like, Richard, what are you doing? Like, why don't you just do some billable work and that's how you'll get your promotion? But because I invested in that time, I suddenly had this really flexible, amazing template that was better looking, more flexible, faster to use, you know, less, more reliable than all my, you know, all my colleagues. And so what that took them a week to do, I'd take do in a morning, right? Because I had the basics there. I wasn't reinventing the wheel. And it looked really good, and I could was more insightful. And so suddenly that couple of weeks of investment allowed me suddenly to have my free up my time, work on business development, you know, learn project management skills, focus on interpreting the models and not just building the models. All these things, you know, I became the youngest ever partner, right, in that company. Wasn't just because of that one template, but is that model of, you know, how do I invest now to make everything easier in the future? You see, so that was for me, that was the most strategic thing I could do. So operations was all the projects I had and all the client demands and what the partners wanted and all the rest, right? But for me, the most strategic thing I could do was to build that piece of infrastructure, build that capability. And that's why I say, like, if you're really good at operations, you'll be careful that just like, yeah, I know how to nail things. Give me more to do, more and more and more. That's not going to get you there. It's slowing down and asking yourself, what do I, you know, what's going to be that number one improvement project, for example, that's going to really build a new capability, a new skill, a new relationship that's actually going to make the difference.
So if we challenge some of this then, and we say, maybe thinking about personal strategy and self-development, it's not a particularly new subject, is it? And you know, there's lots of information out there, lots of books, you know, we've even had probably four or five guests on the topic. So I suppose my question is, why do people forget it? Is it just as simple as being bogged down in operations, as you're saying? So you know, Val and I's our experience is mostly working on major projects, and you know, you have a lot of people running around like crazy. But how can businesses get people thinking about it as part of the culture? Is it something that needs to come top down, middle, out, or people just need to, you know, have a good personal development plan? How do you get it into the culture, I suppose?
It's a great question. So first of all, why does it happen to us is your first question. I think why does it happen is because we live in the world of infinity, infinite messages, infinite social media, videos to watch, you know, things to consume, inbox messages in their inbox. It's infinite. It just keeps coming in, right? And that's never really happened in human history before, right? That we can literally have any book, any movie, any music, any conversation with anyone in the world, anytime, right? So first of all, it truly is infinite. We can't get through it. But we still try to beat that with productivity. We look for a new productivity tip, right? but we can't get through it, right? It just does not, we cannot get through it. So I like to say that like productivity is a mortal's weapon, and you're dealing with infinity here, right? You're dealing with the gods, right? It's like you can't get through it. So, and then the problem is that infinity creates its own trap, because we respond to it, as I said, by getting busier and busier, and that creates tunnel vision. So we feel we're being focused, but we're actually missing these opportunities just off to the side. Like we're chasing the rabbit through the forest or whatever, but we can't see the boar or whatever over here that's trapped in the bushes that would be a great meal, right? So it's like that's what we don't see. Or you might have seen that YouTube video of the basketball team and they're passing a ball between them. And it's basically, I can't count how many times the team in black, whatever, passes the ball between them. So you count, and it's 17 or whatever the number is, and they reveal the answer, and you're really happy, and or at least I was. And then the question comes up, but did you see the guy in the gorilla suit? And there was a guy who walks through the middle of this basketball match in a gorilla suit and waves at the camera and walks off again. And just, I didn't see it, right? Most people don't see it because they're so focused on counting the ball. And so when we get busy because of all this infinity, right, we just don't see it anymore. We miss these opportunities. That's why it keeps us in incrementalism, right? So that's the trap. And so you say, well, why do people forget it? Well, it's because I think they're dealing with just one of the four factors. So in the book, I actually go over the four, which conveniently spell the acronym TIME, which I was very happy about. The first one is tactics, right? So sometimes we do need tactics, right? Like we might actually need to tighten up our workflow. I say most people overdo that, or they think that's the only solution, but it is a part of it. You do need some practical down and dirty, you know, like if you are basically running a loss in a business, you have to make some fixes to be profitable. And as individuals, if we're crazy busy, we need to make some fixes to create margin that we can invest in the future. So tactics is important. Then you've got influence, which tends to get overlooked, because no matter what plan you build to become more strategic and free up your time, unless you actually manage to persuade your boss, your team, your peers, that this is how you're going to operate from now on, you'll be dragged back, right, to the status quo. It's like if you try and go on a diet, with your family will be the one that offer you the chocolate cake, right? Yeah. Because offer you the glass of the beer or whatever, right? Because that's how they're comfortable working with you living with you in a certain way. And they don't want to be made feel guilty that they're eating the chocolate cake and you're sitting there with an apple, right? It doesn't make them feel good. So they're going to want to kind of bring you back to where it's comfortable for them. And same in the workplace. You know, if you say you're not going to do emails until 5 p.m. every day, people are going to be, yeah, but I need things from you, right? So, you know, your boss is going to be like, hey, I need you to be more responsive. So you have to deal with that. Okay, that's influence, right? It's the leadership challenge in this, which requires some conversations, right? People can shy away from those. They'd rather just work on their Gmail filters, right, by themselves, and not get into the scary world of actually having to talk to people and renegotiate. Then you got mindset, because actually we're driven by what we think is necessary, possible, and desirable. We can talk about that, but it's a key thing, right? Like if we think we need to be busy all the time, if we feel guilty for thinking for 5 minutes or 10 minutes or half an hour before that we're not really doing anything, if we're thinking, right, we're never going to think, right? If we feel we're being unreliable, if we're not always doing our inbox, then we're never going to do it, right? And so forth. The mindset's key. And then the last piece is environment. So they spell time, but environment is really about the corporate culture, right? About your team. If you're running a team, how do you create this culture in your team? So that really gets, Martin, to your point about how can companies help? And so the answer is, yeah, I think they need to. Leaders don't focus on helping build an environment of strategic focus for their teams. Instead, they just throw things at their teams. They pile things on. They change direction randomly. And they don't help their team understand that they need, everyone has to take some time, you know, take time to think, take time to focus on what's really important. And also be bold to say, you know what, this is no longer adding value. We need to let this go. So I think how we do that as a leader is how we create culture change in general, which for me is through language, right? So until you have a language to talk about these issues. Unless you can talk about it with your team, you're not going to change it. Which is why in my book, I use all these terms, the infinity trap, right? Strategic time is that time you make available for working on the next thing. These four factors, right, that we've just gone through. There's plenty of other phrases I use because I'm deliberately, somebody said it's a bit quippy. The book was a bit quippy, you know, but my point is that I don't care about being quippy. I care about trying to like come up with little memorable things that people can transmit in conversation, right, about how to build habits or what a strategy look like. And so I think as a leader, even if you're not running the whole organization, you've got a team. It's like, well, how can you start to have that conversation and give people language to talk about this challenge? I'm talking too much. I'll stop. But hopefully that's given you some points. Yeah,
that's brilliant. No, I think the real trick of that is having something memorable like time. You know, Val and I were just scribbling down the, in the background. So I'm sure we'll have some follow-up questions on that. My next question is kind of linked to the point of leadership. And when you go into organizations and you talk about their stories and why they might not feel that they're progressing because maybe they're not setting enough time for their own personal development. What kind of questions do you ask to get to the bottom of some of those stories or challenges about why stuff just can't happen in their day-to-day lives? Like maybe calling bullshit on some of their claims. You know, the one that Val and I always get is, but my project's unique. You know, that's the one challenge of every management consultant ever hears. What kind of things do you do? Are you able to challenge just through your experience, or are there any tips that you can sort of pass on to the listeners to get them into that coaching mindset and get them thinking maybe the, you know, lower level manager with a couple of people under them, or the CEO with whole army of people? How do you just getting them to start thinking about it?
So your question is how you challenge people's assumptions about the way things are.
So how would you go into X organization, you're talking to the CEO and they're you know, they're saying they struggle with time management, they're stuck in the operations, they just don't have time to do strategy.
Right.
Yeah, how would you go about challenging that?
Yeah, it's a great question. Okay. So yeah, I have a rule that whenever a client says to me something like, the reality of the situation is, alarm immediately starts to go off. Because it's like, obviously, this is not, what they're about to tell me is not the reality. It's definitely their story, right? It's definitely a story that they're telling themselves. And the other one is, you know, I'm just this kind of person, and they just say something. And again, the kind of person that we are is just a story that we tell ourselves. Our personality is just a survival strategy that we've built, and it's worked for us, and so we keep doing it, right? But there's no reason why, you know, if we can bring other things out of ourselves, right? Whenever we want to, whenever we need to, you know. What comes to mind is like, you know, some mild-mannered woman who's really, you know, really timid and everything, you know, but she's a mother. And so if her kids get threatened, she's not going to be the mild-mannered woman, right? She's going to be in their face. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, fathers as well. Right? But our personality is generally just a habit that we have learned, right? So anyone who says me these things, I kind of like want to question them. So so somebody says to me, yeah, I haven't got time for strategy or whatever. I'll give you an example, right? Because often it requires a bit of diving in. So one client I remember, he just moved up to the C-suite. He was running an HR, actually, for a large 7,000-person organization, present in 20 countries, a couple of billion in revenues. I'd be working with the CEO, I'd work with the CFO, I'd work with a few of the leaders. And the CEO asked me to work with him. He suggested that I might be good to work with his new HR leader who has just stepped up to the C-suite. So I thought, sounds great. We hit it off, and this guy said, yeah, let's do some work together. So we were working together on really helping him deliver some transformational projects into the organization. Some, you know, internal structure, you know, employee experience, software and projects and various things. Because it was very archaic what they had before. It had been built by acquisition and it was all over the place and it was not consistent. And he was making good progress. But then one day he came to me and he said, Richard, you know, I'm spending too much time in my email. I'm not getting to these important projects at the moment. I need some, can you give me any tips? You know, again, looking for that productivity tip. And I was like, look, you're paying me too much money to get a tip. Yeah, just go and Google the tip if you need a tip, right? But I'm not sure that's really what you need anyway. So just tell me a bit more about what's going on. And what, you know, why are you stuck in your email? Well, he says, well, I can't do anything about it, right? Because a lot of people still need my support on things. And I don't want to be that guy who's always the one people are waiting for. I don't, you know, I want to be a reliable and trustworthy team player. You know, I'm a very people-focused person. I want to be a good team player. And I feel if I don't reply to them, just leave it in my inbox, I'm letting them down. So, you know, my model, this is M, right? Mindset. Okay. So I kind of said, well, I can't help you. What do you mean you got to help me? You've been paying all this money. You got to help me. I said, well, I got to help you because if I tell you how to like not reply to all those emails, that's going to make you untrustworthy, unreliable, and not a team player. That's against your values. So you won't do it, even if I tell you, you won't do it. And it's like, well, what are we going to do then? I said, well, tell me about your CEO. What would he say if he was in the room? Oh, would he want me to do these transformational projects? Yeah, we've agreed that these are my key objectives for the year. Got it. What about the investors? Oh, if the shareholders would hear, well, I guess they'd want them too because there's a big ROI. Okay, right, interesting. How about the employees? You know, all the employees. Oh well, yeah, they're desperate for a more modern workforce environment. You know, they really want this software to be deployed, transformation program. What about customers? Well, it's internal, but I suppose if customers knew, they'd want it as well because it's going to free up our team to spend more time doing what they're meant to be doing, namely servicing customers. So I said, okay, so what you're telling me is like your boss, you know, the shareholders, all these people, they all want you to be delivering these transformational projects. I get it, right? In fact, that's why you're being paid the big bucks, right? Is to deliver this. So I put it to you that when you're in your inbox, you're actually being untrustworthy, unreliable, and not a team player because you're not doing what everyone wants you to do. And so at that point, he had that shift, right? Identity shift in an instant. And he didn't need me to tell him how to structure his inbox, right? Sometimes you need to just do your inbox. But that wasn't his issue, right? His issue was his mindset, his perception of what was necessary, possible, and desirable, right? And we managed to shift that, and his whole world changed. Yeah. And that's, so I suppose it's not one size fits all when somebody's struggling with it, but I'm always looking for what's their view on the world and why is what they're doing logical within their frame of reference? Because most people are going to say, I can't make more time for strategy, otherwise they'd have done it, you know? And that's why in the book, it's like, well, yeah, okay, well, there might be some tactical things you need to do. Or perhaps you've done that, but you haven't had the conversations needed to make it happen. Or actually, probably, you might well want to start with mindset because that might well be that you feel you have to be always on. You feel you always have to be the one who knows everything, understands everything. You might feel you have to people please all your million colleagues who are asking you 1,000 different things that are not really your responsibility. These are the things that keep us back, right? It's not this reality that I have no time. In the on my website, I have a little assessment that people can do, and I put it in the book as well, so that people can actually identify which of these four areas, tactics, influence, mindset, environment, is actually the one holding them back. Because again, what I see when busy people try to work on something that isn't going to move the needle for them, they get fed up, right? Because let's say your problem is mindset. You could spend hours and hours thinking about tactics, but it's not going to help you because you won't do them because your mindset's not in the right place. Or alternatively, if your mindset's fantastic and you've got your plan and everything, but you're not actually having the critical conversations, then you don't need to work on your mindset even more. You need to have the conversations, influence, right? And so I tried to kind of create this little diagnostic tool that allows people to get a sense of where they are, but also what might be the limiting factor. And then they can just jump in and work on that.
Yeah, that's great. It's a great idea because, email is the poison of projects. I find it, it's the lowest denominator in communication because it can be interpreted. But I do believe that the written word is such a powerful tool. You can write a book and translate and change someone's mind. You can change someone's beliefs. You can empower them. through the power of word, right? And it's really, really inspiring, but it can also be detrimental and destructive. Just one email from a CEO on a bad day could result in the resignation of 10 really good operators that you didn't mean what you said, or you meant it in another way. So, you know, that interpretation piece is a challenge, but I'll come back first to distraction, because I think that's what we're really saying. When we have, sometimes we know what our purpose is, and, you know, for this HR C-suite gentleman, it's probably, he probably knew what he was really meant to be doing. But for some reason, we dive into distraction as a almost a self subservient or sabotaging type method. Sometimes it's because we default to what we know. So back to your point around comfort zone, we know we can respond. We know we have the knowledge. We know we have the expertise to solve many fires at once, but maybe we don't have the expertise to kind of execute, you know, a multi-million dollar transformation project, which is always a bit scary, and your neck's on the line. What do you do when you talk about distraction? Because I think a lot of the time when you say make time for strategy, or we make time for strategy, and the model's great, right? Those areas would make sense. A lot of the people can't get out of that tactical. They're kind of stuck in kind of round one, if you like. And it's this circular ring of get up, do this, do that, go to bed. And then you say, I had a really good boss once when I was working in a major transformation in infrastructure, $50 billion project. And we had this really unique boss who he just said, he would just keep saying it. It was really annoying actually at the end of it, but he would just say, Val, time and space. You need to create time and space. And so I'm wondering how that fits into your model, because I think it's a perfect analogy to how you need to think about, you know, getting to that next step, that the strategic piece is, you can't do it whilst you're, you know, responding to 20 emails, 100 emails. No. You know, you generally need to step back a bit. This is generally what happens with, I guess it's the intent of the away days and the strategy offsites, is that you're getting out of the environment. Back to your last point, you're taking some time with the right people in the room to take a kind of a topical bird's eye view rather than being in the in the pits, in the trenches. How do you kind of talk to C-suite executives and various other project teams about distraction? What is your kind of workaround for that?
Yeah, for distraction. Well, I think, so if you like, the whole objective, at least in the book, is creating strategic time, right? Which is this time and space, as you said, right? It is creating space. It doesn't mean you have to be all the time, right? But it is, and so I suppose what I'm saying is it's a muscle to be built, right? Strategic time is a muscle to be built. And so the first thing is, like, don't overdo it. So if you have no time to think right now, if you're just like always in operations, don't try and like put in half a day a week. You know, you're probably not going to get there. But think of, well, how can I start to build a small little habit that allows me to step out of a bit? Right. And once you've got that, you can build on it. So it might be, you know what, that Monday mornings, right, between 8 and 9, or between, or even smaller, right? I'd actually say, like, you're starting, you might say, you know what, when I get my coffee in the morning, whatever, I'm going to just like have 5 minutes. That's 5 minutes, right? The key thing, what we can get to, is like, what do you do in those 5 minutes, right? Because again, if you don't know what you're going to do, we'll just do email, right? Because it's just there. there's, you know, we can do 5 emails in 5 minutes. Let's do that, right? So the first thing is to find somewhere really specifically that this is when I'm going to do and create a little bit of time. And as you do that, you can then build your muscle, right? So generally, you know, I make Mondays my kind of deep work day. It's not all thinking. I'm not just, you know, sitting there thinking the whole day, although perhaps I should actually, you know, I need to do more of this, right? I'm addicted to, you know, making things happen and all the rest of it as well, right? So I do make time for this, but I also experience the struggle as well, and the pull towards just let's roll up my sleeves and do some stuff, right? Knock some things off my list. But I tend to, you know, Monday is like really almost no meetings. There's a couple of, you know, very occasionally something gets on the diary, but generally there's no meetings on a Monday. And then, you know, I have other rules like no meetings before 10:30 in the morning, right? So that I can do deep work so that then when I'm getting into calls with all my clients and everything, and the rest of the day might be just call after call with a bit of, you know, bit of recovery time in between, but pretty much it's focused on coaching my clients. I know I've had that time to be creative, to think, to work on what has to be worked on. So it is a muscle to be built. Strategic time is not just about thinking. It's about thinking and it's about doing the important things rather than the operational things, right? So I might be getting off your question here. I'm feeling I'm going off your question. But you see, let me just go back. So your question was around, around distraction, right? So I think the main point then is I generally find it's better to do that, have that time early in the day, right? Because when everything hits, then like, okay. You know, so it's easier to kind of start your day, say, you know what? Before I get to all those emails, it's like, I'm going to just spend half an hour now just rolling the ball forward slightly on this key thing, which I know is going to it's going to be a game changer. So I'm just going to roll. Imagine if you just rolled forward then your number one game-changing project, just half an hour each day, or even 15 minutes each day. And like I said, like, imagine you're going to buy a house. Big project, right? Not work-related, but you want to buy a house. Sounds a big thing, right? But if you say, well, okay, I've got 5 minutes each day to buy a house. Well, okay, first day, what am I going to do? Well, let me just spend 5 minutes writing down a list of my criteria for an ideal house. That'd take 5 minutes. You write that down. Day two, you might revise that list. Or you might go, okay, let's say day two, you go, okay, day two, I'm going to just get a map out and like circle where I might want to live on the map, like what zones, what regions. Right. Step three would be like, I'm going to send an email to my bank manager asking what loan I can afford. Right. Day four is I'm going to Google the estate agents in my area and make a list of the people that I want to call. You know, day four, in 5 minutes, I call one or two of those. Do you see, like day five, I put an advert on an online website, you know, with all my criteria that I've now agreed in terms of my budget and my preferences. Do you see what I mean? So in 5 days, you can actually make quite a lot of progress in just 5 minutes or so a day. But what tends to happen is we go, oh, it's big and it's a bit scary and it could be life-changing. And so I'll do that the weekend and then you don't. And then the week goes by. So if you just move forward a little bit each day on your number one project, your game-changing project, think how far you get in a month.
And I think this is the challenge with society in general, isn't that they can't start something. I think a lot of the people I talk to, they've started. And something that was told to me, I don't know whether it was in the military or not, this might be it's very simple. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. So anyone can start anything, but those that finish tend to have something that the rest don't. And it took me a while to figure it out myself. And it was discipline, because discipline creates consistency. So it's that even if it's that micro habit or that atomic habit of getting up, you know, half an hour early or whatever it is to spend 30 minutes outside just without the phone, without the emails, whatever it is, and then building from that. You do need to, as you said, it sounds like we're getting to like that, you need that foundational step. And then you need to somehow make that apply to yourself in the workplace. And a lot of people I have experienced and work with, they do a lot of separation. So they separate their personal life from their work life. And generally that does work. I'm completely the opposite. So I tend to be who I am at work, which is a bit silly, immature, engaging, interesting. I have random things. Sometimes I'm inappropriate. Martin can speak for that. And I take that home, and then that helps me drive exactly where kind of the center is, what I want to work on, you know, the kind of the ikigai, where's my passion, what can I get paid for? I think with a lot of people as well, they do try this stuff, and then somewhere along the line, if they don't have a Richard by them coaching them, which, you know, if you're not in the C-suite, you probably don't, they kind of fall off the rails, and then they end up back into the default habits, which could be responding to those emails if we use the same story again. What does the science say? Because obviously I'm not an expert business psychologist or you know, in that space. Have you done any research around what correlations there are between personal habits and particular habits in success? Because I think personal habits do drive how you perform in professional settings as well. Is that right?
Yeah, I think they're inextricable, right? Because your personal habits are driving things like, you know, they basically drive how you show up at work, right? At whatever time in the morning. I mean, it drives your sleep, you know, your sleep, your energy levels, right? Your mental state as you go in. So I think they are absolutely intertwined. Obviously, people like me, I'm an entrepreneur, so it's all one fluid mix anyway, right? I get to choose where the boundaries are, or at least there are no boundaries, right? But I get to choose how I flow between those modes. But I think you're completely right. And I think what stops you from falling off the block, right? So I think the first thing is to go for tiny, you know, really go for tiny little tiny habits, right, that you can actually sustain. And I think the other one is really getting clear about your mission, right? So like, why is this important, right? Like, what are the stakes? So before you actually start to do any of this work, you have to decide, is it actually worth it? Right. So that's where, you know, if it's just a should do, I should like spend time to think about strategy, you know, you're not going to do it. But if you go, you know what, I don't want to be stuck at this level forever, you know, whatever. I wanted to make these things happen in my life. Therefore, I need to get out. I'll give an example. I worked with this guy. He was a finance director in a company, one of my programs. He was a mid-level guy. And he was completely overwhelmed with all his work. He'd basically figured out the most complex finance process in the company, which is why he got promoted, because he was like, he was the go-to person, right? So great. But of course, he'd kept all these and he was now at a higher level. So he had a team and he had all this, plus he had, you know, the sales commissions, he had the month-end reconciliation, I don't know, all these different kind of things. And it was killing him. You know, he was just working so hard and he felt he couldn't delegate it to his team. It was so complex. How could he possibly explain all this ridiculous manual systems they had to do? And I was talking with him and I said, well, how much of this time does it take? And we calculated it and it was 30% of his month was going on these repetitive tasks. So I was like, well, that's not going to make you CEO, is it? Those activities, that's just keeping the light on. It's not going to make you CFO. Right? It's not going to get you your promotion that you want, for example. It's just, you're just doing the same thing every month, right? Nobody really appreciates it. I mean, it's important to be done, but it's just keeping the lights on. And so we really realize, oh yeah, this is, A, it's not fun, and it's not even helping me at this point. It did help me, but now it's just taken for granted. And so he realized, you know what, perhaps I could delegate this to my team. And he wasn't sure to start with. He really was quite against it, but we worked on that. And he realized, you know what, yeah, perhaps I can do this. And perhaps I don't have to do it all. I can delegate a bit and, you know, we can do it progressively. But that was affecting his project. It's like, well, you know, if you invested like a few minutes each day on that, then you could eventually get rid of it. And he did. I mean, about 2 months, he'd freed up this 30% of his time. He went to his manager and said, what do I do now? I'm a bit of a loose end. You know, I've got all this extra time. And he was given extra responsibilities in the commercial part of the business. And, he's got his promotion, he advanced, and, you know, he was able to increase his impact. So the point is that there, he had to build this habit, but the payoff was clear, right? So I suppose I should talk about it in the book towards the end. When we're building a new behavior, we have to decide, first of all, what's the behavior we want to work on? Are we motivated for that? Do we know when we're going to do it? Do we have the ability to do it? So are we like trying to bite off too much? Or is it small enough that we can actually do it? But also, really importantly, consequences. Does it really matter? Am I really sold? Am I motivated to do it? But does it really matter? Because if it doesn't really matter, I will give up when my motivation goes down, right? So does it really matter? And also, what's the timeline? So again, if you just sign up to a behavior that just feels like it's a good to have behavior forever, it's harder than to say, I'm just going to do this for the rest of my life. I mean, we can, and it's a good thing to do, but it might be better to start by saying, you know, I want to over this period of time, do this in order to get such and such a result. And that tends to be easier. So again, play to your strengths. If you're a great project person, treat this stuff as a project. You know, like, I need a little project to free up 5 hours of my week in the next month and work a little mini project on yourself.
If we jump into one of the other things on the time acronym, influence, we probably haven't covered that one in as much detail. What do you mean by that? And maybe if we use the scenario that we were just talking off air before, where, you know, you've got the project manager who's working 45, 50 hours a week on multiple projects, he or she doesn't have time to, you know, they think they don't have time to think strategically, but what kind of things can they do to really nail that influence inside of things so they can achieve their goals and, you know, hopefully progress in their career?
So I suppose the first thing would almost be to say, like, if, you know, if they would let you, what would you want to do? Yeah. Right. So you need to have like a plan, like, what do you actually want? So in the book, I go over like a 5-step plan, like, we're literally where you like take it, you know, take your, well, you do a commitment inventory. So you literally like look at what you actually do in the week, like, where do your hours actually go, and how valuable and motivating are those different activities? So you got to figure out what's valuable and what's got to go. And then there's these 5 steps you can go through, you know, are you going to get rid of it? Are you going to reduce it? Are you going to delegate it? These kind of things. Once you've done that, you've then now, okay, this is what I want. Now it's, well, how am I going to have those? Who needs to align if that's going to happen? So the classic one is, you know what, like, it might be something like, I'm being dragged into this thing by this, you know, I'm always getting escalations from this other department. They always come to us. I'm helping them out. They've kind of got used to me helping them out, but actually it's not really my job. It is their job. And they've kind of got comfortable just coming to me all the time on this, but it takes a long time. And, you know, that might be a great example where it's like, okay, am I actually going to go to my peer and actually renegotiate that? Right. And then you might just say, I'm not doing it anymore, but that might not necessarily be how you want to do it. You might want to also say, look, you know, we're both aiming at this. I've got some projects right now. So, you know, you're going to have to perhaps set the context, agree what your common goals are. Understand, yeah, and start to explain that you're not going to be able to support them in the same way. What other options would they have? Yeah, so there's different ways you can look at that. I think for me, the big message is always to really think before you deliver the content, you need to be setting the context so that the conversation is in the right frame of reference, right? So if you go to your boss, that's where you probably have the least leverage directly, right? With a peer, you can kind of say, I'm not doing it anymore. You know, my team's not doing it, sorry. With your boss, you probably can't say that. So with your boss, you're going to have to actually say, look, you've asked me to work on these key projects, right? This is my focus, or, you know, this is, I think, how we add the most value. However, I'm realizing that I can't put enough attention on that if I still have to do these other things, right? So what I'd like to propose is, you know, rather than coming to the all-hands call every week, yeah, I just come for the first 5 minutes and get a brief update. Or, you know, I come every 2 weeks. Or actually this project that I'm on, I think somebody else on my team can handle that perfectly fine, right? And you need to kind of sell it to them, right? As in, this is the benefit to you and it's also going to help me out. And then engage with them. Like, does that actually, do you see any problems with that from your side, you know? And be open if they say, oh yeah, it's not going to work, rather than going, okay, fine, you lean in, you're curious, you're like, okay, what could I do that would perhaps allow me to still spend more time on this project and give you what you need in this? So the classic one would be, you know, if you say, I need to spend Monday mornings from 9 to 11 working heads down, focused, and they're like, no, I need to be able to text you at any time, you might say, well, would it work, you know, would it be okay if you called me in that Monday morning period and I'll pick up the phone if you call, but if you send a message, I assume I don't need to look at it, right? And then they can go, okay, fine, if you've got an emergency, I can still get through to you, that works for me. And they'll generally be impressed at your new focus and commitment, right? And making things happen and standing up. So that's what I mean by influence, really, is making sure that we actually have those conversations, identify what they are, and then build the muscle for those. Yeah,
quite,
for those
quite nice link back to your mindset point there, because you're saying, you know, what creates value for your stakeholders and doing that. So it's a really nice segue. I thought. Any questions from you, Val? Any final? Probably running short on time.
Yeah, I think we're running short of time. It's been fantastic, Richard. I mean, obviously an hour goes quickly with us, and you know, we could have delved even deeper into the topics, but we love the idea of a model and an acronym. Time's a great one, so you've done well there. Obviously, you've got a book, Richard. Any final words for our listeners?
Yeah, sure. So, again, for me, this is not about time management, as you heard at the start. You know, my goal is to help people move out of incremental progress, what I call exponential, right? Breakthrough progress. So that's why this is so important, right? It's when you're stuck in this infinity trap, the problem is you're like a business that has no margin to invest in the future. So you need to create margin, not financial margin. In this case, it's the margin of time, right? So that we can invest in making ourselves a better future, working on the things that have to be worked on, seeing the shortcut, the opportunity that we're missing, right? That's the game here. That's why I really urge you. For me, it's the number one predictor of future success is the time that we can take to step back, reflect, and work on what's important. So if people want to, you know, find out about the resources, the best thing is to go to my website, xquadrant.com. And if you go to xquadrant.com/projectchatter, I'll just put the resources there for this. So namely, there's the link to the book, Making Time for Strategy, which you can also find at that website, makingtimeforstrategy.com, or you can find it on Amazon. There's also that, I'll put also on that page, the link to the assessments. So if you want to get your time score, as I call it, and get your assessment, you know, which of those four areas do you need to work on first, then go there. And then if people want to follow me on LinkedIn, for example, that could be a good place to see what I'm up to.
Brilliant.
So that's probably
excellent. And Martin, anything else from you, mate? Super delayed.
I'm sorry. Can't compete with that. That was really, really profound there. Yeah. No. Thanks a lot for your time tonight. And yeah, hopefully our listeners enjoyed that and hopefully get some good tips.
Yeah. Thank you. It's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed the conversation. And yeah, what I'd say is be courageous, right? Be courageous, because your impact is, that's where you're going to find your impact, right? Through those bold moves, right? Yeah, exactly. That we haven't already made.
Exactly. Once again, a massive thank you to Richard Metcalf for his time today. We really appreciate it. And also a massive thank you to Martin for stepping in a more comprehensive role with Dale missing. We won't miss him next time, but we do say, till next time, stay safe and be disruptive and have fun doing it. From Martin and I, it's goodbye for now. Project Chatter supports and is a member of Zero Construct. Zero Construct is a new working group that wants to lower carbon construction. Not everyone will be aware, but construction contributes to around 12 to 15% of total carbon emissions.
This is a staggering amount, and we need to reduce it. We are a growing community of people that want to help make this change. Everyone is welcome, whether you're an engineer, contractor, or consultant. You just need to want to make a difference.
Our aim is to grow a network of experts so we can all learn from each other and make a positive impact in the places where we work. We'll do this by sharing knowledge and making it accessible in engaging ways.
To join us and find out more, please visit zeroconstruct.com and register as a member. Thank you, and we look forward to speaking with you soon.
For more information, blogs, or to support our charities, visit projectchatterpodcast.com. And if you would like to sponsor the podcast, get in touch via our website.
You can also leave us a voice message via our anchor page and let us know if there's something or someone specific that you would like on the podcast.
Views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast belong solely to the participating individuals and not necessarily to the individual's employer, organization, committee, or other group or individual. Additionally, any views or opinions are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, or individual.